What's happening, family? Welcome to In the Black of My Mind podcast. I'm your host, Al Thomas. Today, we're going to have part two of the Greg Boyer interview. Greg, if you aren't familiar with him, is a multi-instrumentalist who played trombone for Parliament Funkadelic, Prince, and a lot of other well-known artists as well. So now's the time. Go get you some libation. Go get your favorite snack and kick back and enjoy this podcast with us. But I need you to do me a favor, though. Go down to the bottom of the screen, click subscribe, like, comment on there, and share this with everybody. How many bodies? Everybody. Share this with everybody. All right? In the meantime and in between time, y'all be blessed. I got some rapid fire questions I want to ask you. Who are your musical influences?
That's going to vary from day to day, but off the top of my head, I would say Jimi Hendrix, Jaco Pastorius, Gene Ammons, Fred Wesley, Rodney Skeet Curtis, Cannonball Adderley, and that's just today. Now you ask me that question tomorrow, it's gonna be six or seven different people.
Right.
I like a lot of different kinds of music, so and my influences will reflect that.
Well, as can be witnessed by all of the different types of people that you've played with, because I left out all of the country names and stuff like Lynyrd Skynyrd and all them other folks that Hank Williams Jr. and that you played with and all those. So I was like, yo, you definitely got to be eclectic taste and stuff.
Yeah. Now, I'm going to bring this up now you mentioned Hank Jr., because that, to me, was a good experience, and it was a not-so-good experience.
Oh, really?
First off, a guy that turned me on to that gig's like, look, I don't write charts. You do. You would be perfect for this. So I wrote out some arrangements and got them for everybody, and they took such good care of me. I mean, the room and the money and the whole enchilada was great. I was like, I could do this once a week. But after it was all done, it was a tribute to Hank Jr. So they had all of these people playing and everything. I went down to meet Hank afterwards because, you know, he was pretty much sitting on the throne smoking a cigar all night. Oh, so everybody's like, we love you, Hank. And they showing movies about how he liked the hunting fish. Okay. Then there's like music, we love you, Hank. Music, we love you, Hank. You've seen those little things before.
Yeah.
He was up out of his chair. I wanted to go down and meet him just to say that I did. And I said, hey, man, you know, my name is Greg Boyer. I was back there in the horn section and they did all the charts for you and everything. Just wanted to come down and say thanks for the opportunity and I hope you appreciate our efforts. And he said, appreciate our efforts. Yeah. Like, I don't know what he was expecting.
Right.
I wasn't expecting that.
Right.
And then I went to shake his hand and he gave me a left-handed backhand kind of shake and stuff.
Oh, no.
And I was of the mindset of, man, I'll never, you know, when they say you play with this person, that person, I won't use his name.
Oh, right here.
But I was like, no, I'm going to go in and say it just so folks know that, you know, I can do any of this, even country. If I have to, you know, and I'm cool with that.
Yeah, that's foul.
Because, you know, no matter what it is, it's the same 12 notes and it's rhythms. And how you manage those things determines whether or not you succeed in any idiom.
Right.
Yeah.
Oh, man, that's foul.
Yeah.
What are your hobbies?
Cycling. I like billiards, shooting pool, and And I think those are my two favorite hobbies. Everything else is either something I'm supposed to do, like cut the grass and see my grandkids in Indianapolis. I'm supposed to do that kind of thing. But though, as far as things that I do strictly for the enjoyment of, those are the two things that I would say are my hobbies.
What is the greatest accomplishment of your life?
This is another Prince story. He's getting ready to do Jay Leno. I think it was like the last episode of Jay Leno before he took the sabbatical back a few years ago. And he wanted to do this song, Somewhere Here on Earth. And he got the idea that he wanted orchestral woodwinds and, the oboes, bassoons, clarinets, and all of this stuff. And he wanted me to do the arrangements. So he flies me out on a Tuesday. The plane lands at noon. And on Wednesday at 8 was rehearsal. So I have to write out the parts and find seven other musicians in LA, which I'm not familiar with that many people out there at all, especially in the classical world. I had to hunt these people down, write the parts out, and have them ready by 8 o'clock the next evening.
Oh, man.
It went off, I won't say without a hitch, but it got done. And then, of course, they the show aired the next day, and I looked at that and I was thinking to myself, I had to put that together in 30 hours time, which means that I didn't get much sleep.
No, I'm sure. I'm sure.
Yeah.
Wow. And it had to be right because it did meet
Oh,
the
yeah,
Prince's
you know.
expectations.
Yeah, man, Prince, man, it's like, yeah, it can't be anything but right. And the funny thing is, even when it's right, he'll still say, yeah, that's good, but let me move this around. So he's playing three-card Monte with my horn arrangements and said, put this part over here, that part over there. Now it's right. I was like, he's just doing that just so he can say he had a hand in
Right. It was right when
it.
I gave it to
Yeah, really, pretty
you.
much.
Oh, man.
Yeah, but I think that was probably the crowning achievement because of the outcome and the time frame.
Wow.
Yeah.
What's on your bucket list?
My bucket list, my CD, or say my project. Yeah, because CD.
Hey man, I still say CD.
Yeah, if you got an old
Or
Buick out there
album.
that might have a CD, yeah, album, yeah, 8-track. But no, I've been so into making sure that, my name isn't sullied, that I put out some good product. Anybody ask me, call me for anything. I'm really addressing the big store, and I'm not really putting enough work into my own shop. And got a ton of stuff written. And I think the thing that's holding me back the most is not wanting anybody to do anything for free. In other words, if somebody asks me to do a project, I give them a price and they say, yeah, we'll do that. And I feel like I want to do the same thing for somebody, but it's a whole lot of heads to pull this together. I got big band charts and all this stuff. I mean, most of it funky, some of it swinging, a lot of Latin stuff, salsa and song. And I might be my own worst enemy where that's concerned, because now I have to sit back and not look at how to record this stuff, but just look and see how everybody else manages to do it. And then, we get to where we are now, and I invest heavily into this, and you're not really getting any return. This stuff is not going to sell, 500,000 copies. Nobody does that anymore because the streaming is eating everything up. So
Yeah,
it's
no more brick and mortar.
I'd really be doing this for the sake of can I say ego, to say I have a finished product, here it is. Because but I also feel like too, there's legacy involved. I mean, I got kids,
oh definitely,
grandkids and all these people. I don't want to leave up out of this world without, you know, making my mark, leaving something behind before I, you know,
right,
go out crawling into that pine box. You know, so
right. You know, it's so interesting. I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, go ahead. You've hit.
It's interesting that you would say that, because I, I've been playing with a band, with this band called The Better Way. I started years ago, and we'd go in the studio and we would record these projects and stuff, and you know, go play a bunch of gigs, take all the money, everybody pull all the money in, go in the recording studio, and we'd always get to the end of the project and run out of money. And so I'm not, you know, I don't listen to any of those projects, because everybody's listening to it. So, oh yeah, I like this, I like this. All I hear is mistakes or things that I would have done over again. You know, I didn't like the mix on this, or I should have recut this. You know, is that flat? The vocal sound a little flat there? You know, that's what I'm listening for when I hear it.
Because once it's out there, it's permanent.
Right.
You can't wait till somebody buys it and say, hey, give me that copy back, I need to fix the vocals on this song. And
so I turned around and built a studio in my house, and I can record live drums and stuff here. It's not soundproof, so I got to do it during the day. I can't do anything at night, which is cool, you know. But I have yet to put out something that is mine from the studio. Now, other people have come in here and cut stuff and put it out. You know, they got CDs, they got, you know, MP3s, they got stuff online and all that kind of stuff. I don't have anything of my own, you know, that I wrote. I mean, I have a couple, I have songs that are out that I wrote with, you know, with other people and stuff, but nothing of my own that I wrote in my own studio, in my own house.
Yeah. But I managed to lock down a way to get this stuff done without having a lot of the out-of-pocket costs. You know, somebody just has a setup and is willing to invest time. And, you know, where they get theirs is on the publishing and everything.
Right.
And I could get that. But they're not one of those people to say, look, the label gets 85 and you get 15. You know, it ain't going to be that at all. You know,
right.
It's going to be an amicable split of that. So, you know, now with P-Funk not being on tour and, you know, I'm having a little bit of downtime, I'm just going to get up and use, you know, one of the mantras, you know, the beginning of the journey begins, the journey of a thousand steps starts with one.
Or
any one of those little things. I just have to just go ahead and get a magic marker and write all over the wall and read this stuff. Because I'm, like I said, you know, I have ambivalence with the way the music is turned out. And I think it might be killing my enthusiasm for it.
Right.
Yeah. So I'm I got to get that back. I got to get that, you know, that fire that I had in my youth, and that's all it's going to take, really. Because you know, as we say in the cycling world, nobody's going to ride those miles for you.
Man, man, God bless you guys out there riding, man. Because I one of my boys, he's a cyclist. He did this ride the other day down there in DMV. I think it was like 54 miles or something like that. I'm like, 54 miles, bruh. If I do 54 miles in a week, it was a great week.
Now, I do these rides usually late in the year, August, September, October, when you've had all summer to get conditioned.
Oh, right.
And I used to ride this 100-mile ride over in Eastern Shore. The Seagull Century. Now, it's flat, but it's still 100 miles.
Yeah, man, please.
And you go on one way, you best believe you're going to hit a headwind at some point.
At some point. Right.
Yeah. That, and I might do 100K, you know, here and there and stuff. But, you know, the thing about long-distance cycling is you have to remember to eat. You have to remember to drink, because a lot of people just so concentrated on the ride itself, they forget to stuff their faces. And next thing you know, they're cramping up and don't know why.
Right.
So, wow. And the other thing too is, you know, I'm not going to go out there and try to break any land speed records. You know, my job is to finish, but same time, I'm trying to go a little bit faster than the Wicked Witch of the West. So,
oh man.
Yeah.
How long does it take you to do 100 miles?
My best time was 5 hours and 50 minutes.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay. Oh, so you're I was
averaging about 17, 18.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. That's
for the whole ride. Yeah, that's pretty good.
That's a real good clip.
Yeah, you know, I'm not going to be out there with them guys. You know, they go out there and knock out 100 miles in like under 4 hours.
Oh, nah.
Yeah, they're averaging 25 plus. You know,
nah, I'm good.
Yeah, that's some of that Giro d'Italia Tour de France kind of speed, man. Right. I don't have that.
You know, another one of my friends is an avid cyclist as well as Marion Meadows. You know Marion?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I know about him, man. Yeah, I know he's – He's a biker.
Yeah.
Definitely is, man.
Yeah. Where is the coolest place you've traveled to?
Ooh, the coolest place. It's too many to mention. It is. I mean, you know, I could go to Geneva and it'd be cool as I don't know what, then I could go to some little burg in southwest Germany. Mm-hmm. I was like, man, I really like this spot. You know, mm-hmm. I always ask myself when I get to some of these places, could I move here?
Oh, right.
And after time, it's yes.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, language barrier aside, man, I could, like, I wanted to visit my daughter out in New Mexico. She moved to Albuquerque.
Uh-huh.
And I went to see her, and it's hot, it's sun everywhere. But I'm saying to myself, I could make this place a home.
Wow, yeah.
Yeah, so it really depends on what neighborhood you're in, who you're hanging with, and it's just one of a number of things. Like, shoot, I could go and move to, like, Osaka or Nagoya, Japan. And if I could get a grip on that language, I'd be all right over there.
All right. Well, you know, you spend a little bit of time over there, you pick it up.
Yeah.
You definitely. I spent a year in Korea, and I got to the point before I left that I was conversational. You know,
wow.
I couldn't read it, but I was conversational.
Yeah.
So, you know, I could be anywhere in the country and make myself understood.
Yeah.
You know, so. But you just because you become immersed in it when you're there and you're in it and stuff. You know?
Exactly.
Yeah.
And my biggest question with a lot of people that are linguistic is, are you translating in your head and then saying it in that language, or are you just speaking the language like you know it already?
Right.
Yeah. When you get to the point where you're talking it and not translating it, that's when you know you've got it down pat.
Right. Yeah, no, I took Spanish in a year in junior high school, a year in high school, and 2 semesters of Spanish. They combined the class in 1 semester. It was a 6-credit course.
Yeah.
So if you average all of my grades together, I probably got like a C-, D+. I was suffering, man. I couldn't. The verbs had me messed up, the verb tenses and you know, verb phrases and stuff. But I didn't realize why I couldn't conjugate verbs in Spanish until late. It was like I couldn't conjugate verbs in Spanish because I couldn't conjugate verbs in English.
Now, it's a funny thing because you talk about learning anything. In the States, I think the focus is more on passing tests. As opposed to teaching you how to think.
Right.
Now, you might get some of that in private school, but even they will, according to who's their donor, will only teach you one thing or the other thing, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But I think true education is one, immersion into a culture, And two, when they teach you how to think instead of just answering, instead of saying 2 + 2 = 4, when you teach you how to think, you know why it's four,
Right,
not
right,
just that it's four.
right.
And our system here in this country is, I think, letting a lot of people down because they concentrate so much on test scores that they really are not focused on education, which is what
Right,
school's supposed to do.
right, right,
Yeah.
right, right.
That's why you have a lot of people believe in certain BS and not want to, but I'm preaching to the choir. Like I said,
Yeah,
and you don't
no.
make this political,
No. I'm with you. Go ahead. Go ahead. Yeah, man. It
And that goes for music too.
Oh, definitely.
You go to some of these schools, man, that's like our graduate, so and so, this and that, ended up being a very famous musician, and here's what he did to make himself play that way. Now everybody is coming out sounding like an alumnus instead of sounding like themselves.
Right.
Yeah, you and all of these things that we learn musically, it's like a spice rack. You got a little bit of J.J. Johnson over here. You've got a little bit of Fred Wesley here. You got a pinch of Wayne Henderson. You got some Frank Rosalino. And you got all of these things. And your taste in playing, your sound, because nothing's new. All of the stuff we playing, it came from somewhere before us. You have to create the mixture that is you. Whatever parts of whatever it is, and make it sound like you. Now you're up on a spice rack, and somebody comes after you, uses a pinch of what you used to do to form their playing. And that's the way I look at this, man. It's just like one big kitchen.
Yeah. Oh, nice. That's a great analogy too, man. I so don't be surprised if you hear it again somewhere.
Yeah, I can't own any of this, man.
I will definitely let folks know where it came from. What makes you unique? And you have to know that you are unique. Just I don't know anyone like you.
Playing wise or as a person?
You person, I mean, well, you're playing is a part of you.
Yeah, it is.
You know what I mean?
But I'm
So,
thinking all of us are unique as people,
right.
as long as we're not trying to be somebody else. But that's usually
Right.
a failed attempt anyway. So you end
Exactly.
up coming right back to who you are. But I'm musically the way I am because I'm just curious about everything. If I'm doing a funk gig, I'm saying, okay, how would Fred do this? Fred Wesley to me is the epicenter of funk trombone.
Wow.
I said, how would he do it? Then I say, okay, he would do that. I said, but I'm going to add some Willie Colon into the mix and some Papo Vasquez, and for this gig, and maybe I'll say to myself, how would Slide Hampton play this? And I was like, okay. I said, that's nice and everything, but then I'm going to throw some Herbie Green. And I'm going to throw some Sonny Rollins into it. Doesn't have to be a trombone player. I just feel like I'm drawing from all of these resources of the people that I've listened to, and I have to spontaneously come up with a cocktail of fruit punch of some kind that fits that particular instance. And I think that not trying to shove who I am in every situation that I try to adapt as much as I can and still maintain an original voice. That might be what would set me apart. But the best way to get an answer is ask around, because I'm up there just playing. Somebody else might be listening and hear something that I didn't think of.
Yeah, well, yeah, you I get that. I get that.
Yeah.
But I mean, you know you more
Yeah.
better than anybody else and stuff, so. What's the most important decision that you've made to date?
My wife. Yeah. Because, this is my third time, man. She likes to say she's my last wife. I was like, yeah, baby, go ahead, be optimistic. But I like that. But, I'm 21 years in now. And I was like, I would have never thought that I would make it this far because the first two didn't last that long. You know, for reasons that I'm not going to go into now. But a lot of people are like, what's the success of your formula? And I was like, to find somebody that likes all the things that you do. And all, if you find somebody has all the same interests that you do, you're going to be bored. If you find somebody that doesn't have interests that you're not going to have anything in common. But to me, when you find somebody that no matter what is going on, good or bad, that they sit down and say, look, before we do anything, we're going to iron this out. You know, that person that wants to fix whatever's broken, no matter what, is the person that's going to be your mate for years, all the way to your till you meet your maker. And yeah, that's my good decision, my wife.
I made that same decision, bro.
Yeah.
I had 40 years in now.
Dang.
September 22nd was 40.
Yeah, our anniversary is the 20th.
See, see.
And then my birthday is the 25th. So we kind of do the combination
Okay,
anniversary
nice.
birthday all in the same trip. But I would say that was probably the biggest because it was an actual decision. Everything else was, I either didn't do something and it worked in my benefit, or I was like, maybe I should turn this way, and it ended up being okay. And, but you go back and you could change any minute of your life prior to now, and it would probably produce a different outcome. You know, like my wife, for example, what if I waited a minute before I went back around the corner to backstage? I would have missed her coming the other way. We met on the corner of 13th and E in DC, and I knew her. I'd known her for years. And I was like, hey, how you been? How you doing? Family, and friends. And it was like, how come we never went out? I was like, well, I had them wives and stuff, and you had the husband. Kind of like puts a monkey
that'll
wrench
do
in things.
it.
But that whole conversation is like, what about us? And had I been a minute late or early, I would have missed meeting her at that corner. So you go back in any instance in your life, and had it gone a minute either way, it would have changed the outcome of where you are now. So,
That's true.
it is not always the decisions you make, but the sum of your experiences. Now, that was an actual decision. And, that's why that's kind of like the, well, not kind of like it was the first thing I thought of when you asked me that question. And, not to say that the other two wives were bad decisions, but, had it not been for them, I wouldn't have three kids that I love and adore. So,
Your legacy.
even with the bad stuff, something good comes out of it, even if it's just a lesson learned.
What's your favorite song? Now,
I can't answer that. I can't. It's
it's
because
interesting because most of the non-musicians will come up with a song like right away. But
no,
most of
because
the
I'll get
musicians.
that song. I'll get that song halfway out of my mouth, and I'll change my mind and say, no, I want another one. Like, up now, I might be able to say this with some surety, but my favorite recording would right now would be Asia by Steely Dan.
Oh, right. Nice.
And matter of fact, it was the first CD I ever bought. When the CDs first came out, hey, they had these little metal things, you just shove them in a slot and they played music. And the first one I ever bought was Asia, and which ended up being the name of my youngest daughter.
Oh, wow.
Asia.
Okay. Nice. Yeah.
And not Asia like the continent.
Exactly.
But I would have to put that up there. And then, you know, I could go back and I could say Kind of Blue. I could say A Love Supreme. I could say Mothership Connection. I could say Graham Central Station's first album.
Oh, man.
But, you know, I could, there's so many things I could say after that, and that would be my favorite today. Like, I've been listening to Sheila E.'s newest project.
Oh, really?
By Lara. Holy mackerel.
Really?
Want the back. And it's all Latin stuff. Some English, some Spanish. But it is so well produced, so well written, and it is an absolute banger. So, you know, Sheila, you owe me something for plugging that.
Okay.
And Sheila E. But I've had that on rotation now for like a couple of weeks. You know, I get in the car and I hit Apple Music, and I just sit there and just listen to that.
Wow.
And I keep, and I'll tell you why it's good. Every time I listen to it, I hear something new. Yeah, it's not man, that again. I like that part. I listen to it like, wait a minute, how did I miss that the last time?
Right. Yeah,
she is killing the game. So,
yeah,
you know, that's on my playlist now.
When I was asked that question, what's my favorite song? I said, well, I would have to break it down to genres. You know.
Yeah.
If I had to pick one song in jazz, I think my favorite song would be Dizzy Gillespie, A Night in Tunisia. My favorite funk song is Knee Deep. That's my favorite.
Yeah.
You know, but as you go in different genres, I'd have to... you know, I'd have to go there because I couldn't pick just one song.
Like, yeah, man. I mean, you asked me what my favorite song is. I could either go with Black Dog or The Ocean by Led Zeppelin. Either one of those, man, because people don't realize, man, Led Zeppelin, they played everything. They were a folk band, rock band. They even played a little jazz. But when they played funk, John Bonham, really, he could have been Tiki Fullwood. He's like the Tiki Fullwood of rock and roll.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay.
I mean, that great big sound, and he had that questionable time. But man, you talk about somebody who would just sit there and lay in pocket and pound it out. John Bonham, man.
Okay.
Yeah, he's by far and away my favorite rock drummer.
Okay.
Well, not far and away, because Stuart Copeland is going to come very close second to him.
Yeah.
But, yeah, man. Yeah, that's what I mean, man. You know, I'm listening to Zeppelin, and I at one point was playing bass and singing lead in this rock and roll top 40 band, like in the early 80s.
Oh, really?
Yeah. You know, P-Funk wasn't on tour, and I was like, you know, what can I do? And it wasn't a whole lot of call for horn players then, because once Prince came on there and made the one man band popular, everybody swapped out three and four people, the horn section for one keyboard player.
Right.
So I was like, well, you know, I got to make a shift here. So I was playing bass, man. And I was singing all of that Robert Plant stuff. And I don't have it anymore, but yeah, because it's funny because, you know, I was the only black guy in the band. So we doing all these covers and stuff. And we said, well, we're going to leave you in charge of all of the cool in the game and the Commodore stuff. I said, no. You know, you got to throw Rush and Zeppelin in that equation,
too. Right.
They said, you? I said, stand back and listen.
Yeah.
Made the sparks fly off.
I used to like the group Yes.
Oh yeah,
Boston.
Boston is probably the most perfectly produced rock band you ever want to hear.
Yeah.
Nothing on that. There's not a hair out of place on a Boston record.
Right. Yeah, that's true.
And when you take that kind of meticulous attention to detail, you're going to get a great record. And that's what Boston was. They were attention to detail band.
Mm.
I would throw that cassette in and go out on the road. Man, I could drive for hours, man. Just listen to Boston.
Yeah.
More than a feeling. And then don't look back. Man, I go in there and play them. Just flip them over. just go for it.
Yeah. Last question.
Probably doesn't have to be.
the one that I have written anyway. Let's put it down.
Okay.
And might be the most difficult of all of them. Tell me your life story in one sentence.
I was musically curious.
Okay.
Can I add a comma?
By all means. It's still a sentence. Yeah.
I was musically curious, and that had a trickle-down effect on everything else I did.
Nice.
Okay.
Nice. That's it. That's it.
That was a lot easier than favorite song.
Oh, yeah. I guess you got a point there.
Yeah.
I guess you got a point.
But really, I was a little kid, man, and, you know, I was always interested in music. Now, making up songs and stuff. My mom had an ashtray, and I used to take it and put it was a round ashtray with the little thing in the middle you put the cigarettes on. I used to put baby powder on one side and pretend it was the Atlantic record label and spin it around and just sing stuff.
Wow.
I don't know if I've ever made that confession publicly. I might have told a couple of people or whatever, but I've never made that confession publicly before.
Well,
now it's
a
first.
Recorded for posterity and stuff.
Yeah.
Man,
I got mad too, man, because she come behind me and she's like, clean it up. Now I have to mess it up all over again.
Right. Wow. The first instrument I tried to play was piano, and we lived in the projects. And when my folks got together enough money for me to take lessons, and my dad went out and him and a couple of his juice head friends, they brought a concert grand piano. I don't know. Don't ask where they got it. I have no idea. But they brought a concert grand piano into our apartment in the projects. I don't know how they got it inside. And
you didn't see the whole thing happen?
No, I didn't see him bring it in. When I just came home, it was there.
Oh, so you were at school and they were moving pianos in the house.
Exactly. I came in and I was like, you know, so I played, I took lessons, but I had a guy that, first of all, at the music store, they had it was in our little studio, our practice studio, was in a coat closet. So you could put your arms out, you know, extend them out either way, and you could touch the walls and stuff. All right, that's cool. But the dude in there was a chain smoker, and the doors was closed, and he just cigarette after cigarette after cigarette and blowing it in your face. And, you know, I wanted to play Boogie Woogie, man. I wanted to play, you know, what I was hearing. I wanted to play, you know. Nah, man.
Yeah, hot cross buns just wasn't going to cut it.
No, you know. And so I ended up I quit piano, and fourth grade I started playing clarinet. So I played clarinet for up until I got into high school. But yeah, piano was my first instrument, and it's kind of interesting because I don't play it at all now, with the exception of, you know, when I'm trying to program something. But that's not, I don't consider that playing. When we left, my parents, my father and his brother, they bought a duplex. So we were on one side, they're on the other side.
Yeah.
We left the piano in that house, in that apartment. And
yeah.
The guys couldn't get it out. And so the maintenance workers there couldn't figure out how they brought that piano in there. And they ended up cutting it into pieces to take it out. Couldn't figure it out.
they couldn't, they didn't have the wherewithal to say call a piano mover.
But see, now you're trying to make sense, bro. Come on. You're trying to be rational over there.
But you chopped up a piano.
It was a concert grand.
Yeah.
Took up half the living room. Yes, sir.
Now, I took piano lessons. I was 12 or 13. I was 12. And it was like, you're going to take these piano lessons. And no, I was 11 because I had a real lesson when I was 12. I was 11. And I went to see this lady up the street. And she's teaching me how to write a whole note and a half note. I said, I'm a little bit past this.
Right, right, right.
And then she wanted everybody to play this this bastard version of Silent Night, which was so wrong. But I had to play with them. Finally, I just said, look, it goes like this. Da 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 da. And she's like, but you have to learn to play it this way first.
Oh, yeah, see?
So guess what I did the next day?
Quit.
Yep. Then I started taking lessons after that. My cousin had a piano in her house, so I would go up there and take lessons with Mr. Bob Montgomery, rest his soul. And the thing I didn't like about it was, while I'm up there taking, practicing and taking my piano lesson, all my friends are back home in the yard playing baseball and football. And I was like, I didn't have it in me to say, okay, you have to start out small before you get big. You know, if I wasn't getting immediate results, I wasn't getting any results at all.
Okay.
So I ended up dumping piano and going to play sports.
Right.
Now, I had a knowledge of the keyboard. All I needed was muscle memory. You know, I knew chords and I knew what the notes were and everything. Because, like I said earlier, I had perfect pitch, man. So, you know, that wasn't going to get away from me.
Right, right.
But I never sat down at the piano long enough to really get my fingers to do what my mind wanted them to. They were always doing something. And like, yeah, no, that's not it. You know, so I was at a muscular disadvantage because I didn't practice piano.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
Wow. Man, I was thinking about you the other day, and I was like, man, because I said, when I finally catch up to this brother, I had questions I wanted to ask because, you know, I mean, I wanted to play for Parliament back in the day, man. I was like, yo, I want to play for them, man. It just seemed like it was like just the coolest gig and stuff, man. You know, and the funk.
And you're right. There was a lot of things that were really cool about playing with P-Funk. You know, because I was 19 when I got in that band. I was easily impressionable.
Right, right, right.
But, you know, as a musician, I learned a lot. But as a man, I just learned all the wrong stuff.
Right,
you know,
right.
things that I was learning to do on the road were not the kind of things that you do in normal everyday life.
Right.
And now I don't want to elaborate, but it's just like, no, in the real world, it goes like this. But when you're out on the road, it goes another way.
Right, right, right.
And I was learning the other way. And until I started having some discernible time off at home. And, you know, all of that, I play with the band thing doesn't mean anything. I was like, yeah, so what? Where's your band now? You know? So,
right, right, right.
So it might have hindered my growth as a man a little bit, but it enhanced my growth musically.
Okay, got it.
Yeah,
got it. Yeah, you know, it's interesting because the last time I I've hung with like 1979 Apollo Theater, George Clinton retirement concert.
Allegedly, yeah, because he didn't go on the road in 1980.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so he really was, you know, talking about retiring in 79.
So I'm at the concert, and you know, it's supposed to be a retirement concert. And did you play that gig?
Probably did.
Okay.
Yeah.
Because I was Knee Deep hadn't come out that not hadn't been out that long before that gig, And Felipe Wynn comes out with a powder blue tuxedo on and skipping across the stage and stuff. It was interesting because, the show was great. But afterwards, the hang afterwards, because everybody was gone except for the musicians waiting in front of Apollo for a ride.
Right.
So I was hanging out with Felipe and talking to Felipe and trying to think of what's my man's name? Peanut.
Yeah.
Peanut. And we used to go out when Peanut would come into town. We used to take him out to dinner and stuff, you know. Especially when they would play here in town at Toad's Place.
Right.
And the last time
Toad's Place, man, we used to lose it in there.
Oh yeah, please. I remember many times they turn the power off and stuff.
Yeah,
because yo, it was killing it in there. But we went out to eat. So we go back and we're going downstairs in the green room. And so Peanut was like, yo, man, who got a joint? So somebody pulls out a joint. Then somebody else comes out with a joint. Then somebody else comes out with a bong. Somebody else comes out with a pipe. And then somebody else had a fog machine. And the next thing you know, I'm looking around the green room and I couldn't see in there, man. It was like a Cheech and Chong movie or something. I was like, yo, man, y'all are doing this like every night.
Yeah.
Dang. And that was lightweight.
That was back when I used to get down. And I would smoke with the best of them.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
But my son, and this is in 87, my son is looking at me. He's about a year old. Mm-hmm. And I'm up there blazing one because, you know, out there in California, they got all that good weed.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
I mean, everybody got it now, but back then, California cornered the mark on it. And he's looking at me like he knew what I was doing.
Oh, wow.
And I looked at him like, if he's going to partake in this kind of activity when he gets older, he's not going to be able to say, I learned that from my pop. So I finished it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And I put it down and I didn't pick it up again.
Wow. Nice.
Yeah. But yeah, back then in the Apollo, yeah, fog machine, I'm probably responsible for it.
Yeah, man. I've been to so many, man. I went to, like I said, the Chocolate Jam. I went to the Flashlight concert at the Cap Center. I went to the Underwater Boogie concert. I went to the Player concert, Boosie.
Yeah.
Was that Tiger Flower Incorporated? Produce those concerts and stuff.
Yeah, not just a concert, but an event. Tiger Flower.
Right,
yeah,
right. Yeah, I remember.
But when you say Felipe Wynn, I got to go back to that, man, because I got a funny story. Now Felipe came in there, and you know we had been grinding and dragging and all of this, and Felipe comes in and George just gives him the keys of the store, and he just you know, I have to sit by myself and, you know, just being well-deserved, but he was being a diva.
Oh, no.
So, you know, he would go out there and his little cape and everything and stuff. And then he wanted to do Sadie.
Sadie. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Because that's his tune. It's very personal to him.
Hmm.
But because everybody was kind of like, you know, tired of his antics. Nobody wanted to play on it, right? They were like, so I ended up playing bass.
Oh, really?
Behind, yeah.
Wow.
On the P-Funk set. And I gave Dennis a nod, a wink. And we start playing the end where he's ad-libbing.
Uh-huh.
We start playing that with a reggae beat. He blew a gasket. What are y'all doing in that song? I swear, man, if he had a gun in his hand, he would have shot each and every one of us.
Dang.
He did, man. And we were like, well, you know, I ain't got to play.
Right.
So, you know, he was kind of out there with not much of a band. And I think George had to lay down the gauntlet and say, look, one of you motherfuckers is going to play behind.
Wow.
I don't know who, but somebody better make that song happen.
Wow. Now, I didn't know all that was happening, man. I know when he left the Spinners, he was supposed to have been doing this solo thing, and then that never came into fruition. And
No, it didn't. He did one solo thing called Wind Jammin'. I think that was on George's Uncle Jam label.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. And that was it. But you know what? Come to find out later on that he just didn't understand what he represented when he came into that band. And he had to have a conversation with some people to realize that what he was not a welcoming personality.
Right. Oh, wow.
But it had we got to know him as a person, that probably would have been different.
Right.
But you know, we knew Felipe Wynn, the singer, the former lead singer of the Spinners, and that's the way he presented himself.
Oh, okay.
You know, had he been Felipe the man, I think a
Right,
lot of
right.
that wouldn't have happened.
Right. Or Felipe that played in the band with Bootsy back in the day and stuff and
House
was
guests, yes. Yeah.
Wow.
So, you know,
Man, that's
that's a
unfortunate.
lesson to be learned too. You know,
True.
sometimes, you know, no matter what stature you have, you know, humble yourself a little bit in a new situation.
Yep.
Unless somebody's going to shield you. Like, you know, if Diana Ross is the new singer in this band and she's got wardrobe cases and security between you and her, that's just the way it is.
Right, right,
But for
right.
somebody who's going to be in the environment with the band, you know, you humble yourself a little bit. I mean, I was just watching the Ravens game the other night, and Derrick Henry was saying that was the one thing that he did. I mean, he could punch his ticket anywhere, but
Oh,
he said
yeah.
he came in, he said he just was very humble, wanted to learn the system, wanted to learn the guys working the system. And now it's like a
Oh, yeah. That's a perfect
seamless
fit.
partition between him and the rest of the
Yeah.
team.
Yeah, perfect fit.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, I'm a I you know, I root for all the New York teams, but
Yeah.
yeah, I've been rooting for Lamar since he came into the league and stuff.
Yeah.
And he needed that, man. That y'all looking real good right now.
Yeah.
Y'all looking real good.
Yeah. And you know, that's the thing too, man. That young boy down there in DC, the quarterback.
Yes. Oh, he's killing. Well, you know what? Y'all finally got rid of Snyder.
Yeah.
You know?
But you know what too? I've said this all along, and if you think about it, you'll agree with me. DC is cursed. It is a black hole when it comes to quarterbacks.
Yeah,
It
yeah.
goes all the way back to Doug
Because they
Williams.
didn't treat Doug right. That's what
They
happened.
didn't treat Doug right. Joe Theismann had his leg broken. RG3 had his knee shredded. Alex Smith came over and had his leg broken. And now this kid now, man, he's got something. You know, they real mum about what happened to him. I don't know what's going on with his ribs.
Yeah,
Yeah.
you can see him holding his ribs and stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah. He probably got a busted rib and stuff, and he's trying to
Yeah.
tough it out. Man, that kid's tough though, man. He's
Yeah,
a
man.
great, yeah.
That's a hell of a way to make a living, is playing football.
You ain't lying.
And you know what, man? And now that they've added gambling to it,
Oh,
a
right.
fan doing all of that, I don't
Yeah.
trust the outcome of any game anymore.
No.
And you can see them referees, man, you know, siding with different teams and trying to create this one team that's better than everybody else. And everybody like, man, the referees are helping the Chiefs win. I was like, come on, y'all, they all professional. Then you watch a game and you say, there might be some truth to that. And it's not just the Chiefs and it's not just football. It's basketball, it's baseball, it's all of it. Professional sports. If there's $1 million on the line somewhere, then they're going to have some cheaters involved in it too.
Well, those NBA refs they got caught fixing games and stuff. I can't think
Yeah.
of the one guy that he kicked Tim Duncan out of the game. He wasn't even on the court. He's on the bench laughing with his teammates. He got a tech
Yeah.
and was thrown out of that guy that did that got caught
Yeah.
and did some time and stuff. But you know, this thing been going on for a long time, so
It has,
it's too
man,
much
but
money
you know,
involved.
it is, man. And like I said, pro sports, man, is any baseball, football, basketball, hockey, any of them. It's a $1 billion industry. And where there's that much money around, you can best believe dirt ain't far behind. Well, so you know, we just have to look at that like it's pro wrestling.
Exactly. Exactly.
Yeah, you know, but them people that know who's going to win before the game even start, you know.
Right, right. Is it with the generals?
Yeah.
Yeah, the generals. That's what they play with, the Globetrotters.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Washington but, Generals. Yep. Mm-hmm.
But, you know, talking about the money and the billionaires, I'm looking at what's going on now with in music, you know, like with Puffy and that whole situation is just kind of interesting and stuff, man. And I don't know.
And that's my thing, too, man. You know, a lot of this entertainment stuff, you have to be grounded going in, because entertainment in and of itself is a gateway to Sodom and Gomorrah.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. You think about all of these people that come out of nowhere and now they're famous. Mm-hmm. It's not always based on ability. I'm not saying that everybody been on a casting couch or whatever.
Right, right, right.
But, you know, there are favors being made. Mm-hmm. And sometimes those outlandish parties or whatever you want to call them are where those favors are being made.
Yeah, yeah.
So.
Or where they're paying in full.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yes, yeah, indeed, man.
I don't understand it. But, bro, I'm not going to keep you, man, because I could stay here and talk with you all night and stuff, man. I appreciate you more than you know.
A brother can go.
But listen, how can people contact you on social media?
I'm on Instagram. Okay. Let me see. What is that? Greg Trombone on Instagram. And then I'm Greg Boy on Facebook.
Facebook.
Okay. I kicked. What's that? Twitter. I kicked that to the side.
Oh,
because you know, the whole ownership and cesspool aspect of it.
Yeah, it's out of control.
And I don't do TikTok because, you know, anytime they talk about telling one country that you need to curb your content for because you're doing all of this stuff over here, I was like, how about I don't mess with it?
Oh, yeah.
Because if you see TikTok over in China, for example, this stuff is uplifting.
Right. That's what I understand.
Yeah. You know, kids, you need to do this. You need to do that to better yourselves. And then they come over here and it's like the dregs of society.
Exactly. Just trash.
So, and my thing is, any of that social media stuff, you know, you can go down in the, into the sewer with it, or you can use it constructively. You know, right. What it is for you and to you is what you make of it. Hmm. Yeah, so, you know, don't automatically assume, oh, it's Instagram. Oh, no, it's going to be all these ads and hacks and naked this and dirty that. Right. So, no. Hmm. Because it, anything that you don't like, you have the ability to either shut off or change the channel.
Right.
And nobody's exercising that ability. They just stand there looking at it, trying to correct the situation.
Right.
And it's like, no, that's not how that works.
Right, exactly. And some people just come on there with in the comment sections and just say some of the foulest things, just brave behind the little keyboards and stuff. But, you know, then you know that they would never do or say anything like that to your face or in public.
I have one point told someone, I said, look, I have frequent flyer miles. I can meet you anywhere and we could talk about this like gentlemen.
Oh, wow. Yeah. Was it Dave Chappelle said, he said that he would read the posts, but he don't read the comments. And I found myself many a time, you know, in the comments and going back and forth with angry, man. And I'm typing like crazy. I'm mad, man. You know, it's like, wait a minute. Why am I giving these people my energy like this?
And that's the thing. There is a lot of negative energy out in society now, you know. I can't remember one mass shooting from the other. They just all are the same now.
Yeah.
And I can't remember, you know, when everybody was just divided. I was like, we used to have differences of opinion.
Right.
Now you see people, you know, you can't even talk to them anymore.
Not at all.
You know, if I don't like who you voted for, next thing you know, that person's trying to shoot me.
Right.
I was like, you know, I'd be better off just shutting up.
Exactly.
I've been turning around and say, "Ooh, man, what nice weather we're having. Look up there." "Oh, yeah, really?" The next thing you turn around, I'm gone.
Yeah, man.
Just don't have the time or the energy to dwell in that negativity.
Exactly.
So, yeah. You know, anybody that's prone to that type of thing, just leave it alone.
Yeah.
You know, sometimes it's as simple as not going on social media for a week or a month.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
That way somebody posts something and they've all gotten their little opinions and trash out the way before they move on to something else.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. Right. Or as you said before, just turn it off.
Yeah. Right. I mean, it's been a great tool. You know, I'm able to keep people up to date where right. I might be playing
right.
or showing support for somebody else. You know, I'm doing this acting thing, or I'm doing a gig somewhere, and you know, I'll show up, or I'll just say, "Sounds like a winner." You know, hope you have a great turnout, and not just be talking, but mm-hmm. actually being there, just being supportive.
Right, right.
But you know, that right there brings me to another interesting point. How come news always has to be bad? How come nobody put out a channel and they just call it good news?
Exactly.
Yeah. Exactly. I mean,
because it don't sell.
It won't sell. Yeah. People are just so hell bent on seeing like rubbernecking delays. You're not a paramedic. You're not a doctor or an ambulance. Why do you have to slow down and look at the details of a car crash?
Exactly.
Why can't you find an open lane, hit mm-hmm. it, and keep right on going?
Keep on moving. Yeah.
Because people like to see misery.
Exactly. Exactly. and that's what they
kick them when they up. Kick them when they're down, mm-hmm. kick them when they're up, kick them where they're down.
Mm-hmm.
Man, that's on Dirty Laundry about summed it up for all of that stuff.
Man, for sure. For sure.
Yeah.
For sure. Yeah, man.
Doug Henley, by the way. I mean, Don Henley. I'm sorry. Anybody wants to look up Dirty Laundry?
Okay.
Don Henley.
Okay.
Yeah.
I'm going to definitely do that too.
Yeah. Former lead singer of the Eagles.
Right. Right.
Yeah.
Another good band.
Whoa.
Yeah. Another good band.
That brings me up another interesting thing. Favorite album, The Long Run by the Eagles.
Mm.
That thing is perfect from front to back.
Yep. Yep. Yep.
Yep.
Man, I know. That's a great album.
It is, man.
Yeah. And that's the other thing. I miss albums, man. I miss
liner notes.
Yes. And the covers. I mean, we used to get couldn't wait to be lined up at the store waiting for the latest Funkadelic album to come out and go get that album, man. And then looking at going through this, like, oh, dang, man, you know, turn it upside down and all the sideways and everything. And
we did one better. We would take the album, open it up.
Mm-hmm.
We would clean some weed on it.
Oh, that too. Yeah.
You know, get the seeds out. No, I'm going to say it. You probably did it.
Yeah.
It won't say anything. But yeah, we used to clean the weed on it, twist a couple.
Yeah, yeah.
And then we sit there and play it front to back.
Oh, yeah.
Front to back.
Over
and read the cover and laugh out loud, man.
Yeah.
Matter of fact, before I got in the band, the person who probably influenced me the most in P-Funk was Pedro Bell.
Pedro Bell? Really?
Yes.
Wow.
Out of all the musicians and everything, he was my dude because I dabbled a little bit in the art back then.
Okay.
You know, something that my son had just taken times 99 and just really gotten really good at it. But but yeah, man, I used to do all of that stuff and draw the one-eyed things with space antennas and guitars built into the stomach and all of that stuff. I love those covers, man.
So
as a result, you know, all of the folders I had in class and stuff, they have all these wild looking designs on the front instead of just saying English or history.
Hell yeah, no doubt.
I have full on Funkadelic covers right there holding all my signs.
Wow. Pedro Bell. Wow.
Yes, indeed.
Yeah. Yeah, he was ahead of his time.
Oh, definitely.
ahead of his time. And it's interesting how you look at some of the stuff that he was drawing back then. It's like how some of that stuff has actually come into fruition and stuff. It's like, wow, man.
Yeah.
How'd you tap into that, bro? You know?
And that's the thing, you know, what made him the incredible artist that he was he was a serious thinker. You know, he would give you an honest glimpse of the present, remind you of the past, and he would let you see the future all in those album covers. Those covers are so deep. I got my son a couple of those albums for Christmas one year. And I was like, not for the record, but just for the covers.
Oh, right.
Yeah.
I still have all those albums, man, from back in the day.
Yeah.
America Eats Its Young and all that stuff.
Yeah, man.
All right, brother. Thank you so much, man. I greatly appreciate you, man.
That's me shaking your hand.
Yeah, I got you back,
brother. Dap you up.
Yes, brother. Yeah, man. So,
but if I can say anything, man, I just want to say thanks for having me on, man.
Man, you have no idea how much I appreciate this, man.
Yeah, it's been a great hour, has it been?
Has been longer than that, I'm sure.
2 hours. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, it has been 2 hours. I was gonna say my watch stopped running.
Yeah, I probably had to make this two parts and stuff, but that's cool though. Yeah, that's cool.
I'm all for it, man. Just say the word.
Yeah, man. But look, I got your number now, so I'm going to wear out my welcome, brother.
Uh-oh.
Yeah, man. But, hopefully I get a chance to check you out playing somewhere, man, soon.
Yeah, let's hope, man. You know, next time we're up that way in the 203.
Yeah.
Or the 860, depending on where you are.
Right, yeah. No, 203, you're right.
Yeah. Next time up that way, man, be sure to give you a holler.
Oh, please do, man. And we're down in the DMV frequently and stuff. My daughter went to Howard. She graduated from there, and exactly. So
yeah, I'm playing nowadays. I'm playing in the Howard University Jazz Ensemble.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh wow.
They I don't know what prompted the shorter to trombone, but Fred Irby was like, man, you want to come in and sit in this band? I was like, sure. Now, I'm not featuring anything. I'm down there in the bowels of the operation. Uh-huh. I'm playing third trombone, but I'm making sure that those parts are getting played. So,
all right, right.
We have a concert in November coming up, man. I'll hit you with all of that information
please,
in a minute.
Please
yeah.
Do. Please do.
Because I would pull it up now, but oh, here it is. Yeah, we're playing at Howard University, and we go November. Yeah, we're playing at the school November 21st, and then we're playing at we're just playing at the school the 21st of November.
Okay.
It's going to be like a noon concert in the band room.
Okay.
But wait, let me look this up because it's a special guest. Oh, yeah. Lewis Hayes is sitting in with us.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. So that's going to be interesting.
If I can get down there, man, I need to make it happen and stuff. Shoot.
Yeah. If anybody wants to know, Lewis Hayes was the drummer on Cannonball Adderley's Mercy, 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 the live album. Mm. That was Lewis Hayes.
Mm. Wow.
Yeah.
Oh, wait a minute. Before we go, I meant to ask.
Yeah.
You played with George Duke.
Yes, I did. We were on a Capitol Jazz cruise, and they have a house band.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of the artists will submit their material, you know, a couple months out, and the house band sharpens it all up. It was led by Wayne Bruce at the time, the spur of the moment here in D.C.
Okay.
And George Duke was one of those people that came through. He wouldn't carry a whole band with him. He just sent the music.
Oh, okay.
We'd learn it and play it. So I did that a couple of times with George too. And, you know, I had to ask him, but matter of fact, I didn't have to ask him. He just came out and told me, he said, man, when P-Funk came out, I was like into that, you know, to the point where he even did an imitation of Boosie.
Right.
Reach for it. And then, you know, and this is a whole bunch of stuff. He was really into that. He and Stanley Clarke did a version of Mothership Connection.
Yeah, yeah.
That featured Dennis Chambers on drums.
Wow. I didn't know Dennis was on that.
Yeah, Dennis was on that, man. And there's a video of it. And then I think there was a thing where they were trying to get the P-Funk horns to play on it too. But the communication line was broken some kind of way and couldn't make it happen.
Oh, okay.
But yeah, he would have had four people from P-Funk playing on that cut, had that worked out.
Yeah, 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 yeah.
Nice. But yeah, that's how I got to play with him and Stanley Clarke too, you know.
Mm. Oh, I saw the George Duke Stanley Clarke project in New York. Thought I was going to lose my mind.
They were
on the pier, outdoors and stuff, and they just, what a show they gave that day, man. I ain't been right since.
No. You don't come out of a George Duke concert all bright-eyed and bushy-tailed. You've been taken for bad when you go
there. Yeah, oh, man. That's great. Yeah. But yeah, once again, brother, thank you again for doing the podcast, bro.
Man, my absolute pleasure, man.
This has been another episode of In the Black of My Mind podcast. Make sure you like, comment, subscribe, and share. Until next week, y'all be blessed.